Tom Perata's novel Election is the basis of the current film comedy of the same name. That novel has just been published in paperback, along with new editions of his first two books, Bad Haircut, Stories of the 70s, and The Wishbones, about a musician who wants to be a rock star but is stuck playing weddings. Election is about a high school teacher, Mr. M., played in the film by Matthew Broderick, whose responsibilities include overseeing the high school election. When the story begins, only one student is running, Tracy Flick, played in the movie by Reese Witherspoon. She gets on Mr. M.'s nerves. She's too smart, too neat, too perky. Plus, she had an affair with another teacher, Mr. M.'s best friend, who as a result was fired from the school. So Mr. M. wants to make sure that she has some competition in the election. He convinces one of the school's popular football heroes, who has been sidelined by a broken leg, to run for office. Here's the scene in which Tracy's found out he's running.
Who put you up to this?
Oh, hi, Tracy.
Who put you up to this?
What do you mean?
You just woke up this morning and suddenly decided to run for president?
No. I just thought that,
Thought what?
Well, I was talking to Mr. McAllister about my leg and how I still want to do something for the school. And
so Mr. McAllister asked you to run?
Well, I talked to him and everything, but he just said that he thought it would be a good idea and how there's all different kinds of fruits. And well, it's nothing against you, Tracy. I mean, you're the best. I just thought...
Okay, you're on, Mr. Popular.
A scene from Election, adapted from Tom Perata's novel of the same name. Here's Tom Perata reading a paragraph from Tracy's point of view.
All right, so I slept with my English teacher and ruined his marriage. Crucify me. Send me to bad girl prison with Amy Fisher and make TV movies about my pathetic life. If I'd been on better terms with Mr. M., I could have explained to him that my punishment for sleeping with Jack was having to sleep with Jack. It pretty much cured me the older man fantasy, let me tell you that. Until Paul entered the race, I was running unopposed. People understood that I deserved to win. They didn't necessarily like me, but they respected my qualifications. President of the junior class, treasurer of the SGA, assistant editor of the Watchdog, statistician for the basketball team, and star of last year's musical, Oklahoma, in case you're wondering. And I did all of it while conducting a fairly torrid affair with a married man, even if he did turn out to be as big a baby as any 16-year-old.
Tom Perata reading from his novel Election. One of the epigraphs opening the book reads, "The world is the school gone mad."
It was William Trevor's from a novel called The Old Boys, which is about these retired, elderly men returning to their prep school and sort of remembering from a distance of, maybe 50 years that world and how much it had marked their lives later on.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, it just seemed very appropriate for Election.
Well, it seems very appropriate for how we see the world, too, because so often the world does look like a bad version of high school, as if high school wasn't strange enough.
Mm-hmm.
But even in politics, too, you can so often look at a congressman or even a president and feel like you know them from high school. You know what type they were in high school.
Well, that was, in fact, one of the real starting points I had for Election. I was... kind of obsessed with the 1992 election, particularly the three candidates, and I watched it in a way I hadn't watched other elections, and I got deeply involved in the political process. But one nagging thought kept coming to me, which was, I knew those people in high school. I didn't like them in high school, and I like them even less now that they're going to be running my life. And also, I had this feeling that the level of oratory. It didn't improve very much from high school to, grand stages of political conventions.
Now, why did you want to set a novel in high school in addition to this idea that the world is the school gone mad? Had you ever taught in high school? I know you've taught college.
Yeah, no, I haven't. But I think partly because I did teach college, and I've taught at Yale and at Harvard, and I've lived my professional life in a kind of rarefied climate, but I went to... a public school in working class part of New Jersey, and did have some idea in the back of my head that high school was the last time I really was part of America in terms of, having to mingle with, people who didn't belong to some self-proclaimed elite. So in my own mind, I think, high school exists as a kind of democratic interlude in my own life. So I think it's like partly a feeling, as you say, that this world is the school gone mad, but also this you know, personal mythology that says high school is America, you know, and college is some, you know, rarefied place where you kind of escape from America.
Well, let me read something that the teacher, Mr. M, is thinking about one of his students who is not mingling very well in school. And he says, Lisa Flanagan was exactly the kind of kid I was trying to reach, a smart, unhappy girl who wanted nothing more than to be accepted by the jock cheerleader aristocracy at the school and had no idea, how could she, of how relieved she was going to be to find a different world in college, more charitable standards of value. Well, you've taught at college. You've taught at Harvard. Do you think the standards are more charitable?
Yeah, I do. And particularly, I think, for smart kids. I mean, I think in various ways, you know, college has its own systems of oppression, but I remember feeling, you know, deeply liberated the day I got to college, and that's a feeling that sticks with me. And in fact, I was teaching a class not long ago and on election, and some students were asking me, you know, what do I believe? And they had some sense that the book was cynical or nihilistic. You know, you don't believe in democracy, or you don't believe in that teachers are... you know, good examples. What do you believe in? And I thought for a few seconds, and I thought, oh, college, I think.
You were teaching when you wrote the novel Election, and I'm wondering if you saw yourself as a teacher differently after writing Election and examining the motives of the teacher in the book.
It's an interesting thing, because I think, you know, around the same time as I wrote it, you know, I had just gotten married, and I think that changed my sense of myself as a teacher. I think it's hard to know if the book did it or if the change in the period of my life did it, but I do know that I went from being one of those teachers who felt himself sort of in the thick of the class and just another one of the students who in some way had, you know, was getting paid to lead the class, to really feeling some distance from my students and feeling myself in a slightly more... official position. And part of that was just cultural as well. You know, one of the things Election is about is sexual harassment. And around the time I wrote it, it had become, you know, a deeply important issue in you know, on American campuses. And suddenly things that people had done all the time. I mean, I remember being in school in the 1980s and, you know, knowing people who had affairs with teachers. And, you know, there was some sense that that was risky or interesting or daring or problematic, but no sense that it was, say, illegal, you know. And you'd suddenly meet teachers who are saying, well, you know, I have to keep my door open at all times. I want people around. You know, it was both personal, cultural, and related to the book Election. It's hard for me to separate all those things, but I did feel that, you know, I could no longer be just, you know, one of the kids in the class.
How did your Harvard students react when they found out that your novel had been optioned by MTV Films?
Well, you know, they were totally excited, and this is one of those things, I think, that another change I can mark between the early 80s and now, and that's that when I was in college, people who wanted to be writers wanted to be fiction writers and poets, and now people who want to be writers, particularly at Harvard, you know, which is a great... feeder for Hollywood. You know, they want to write movies and TV shows. So there's some way in which, you know, I became much more interesting to them when I had this movie. But I remember that I was trying to describe to them what the story was about. And I said, yeah, and it's about this election for high school president. You know, what could be more meaningless than to be elected president of your high school? You know, what an empty charade that is. And I remember, you know, pausing and seeing all these stricken looks among the former high school presidents who were in my class.
That's funny.
One guy, yeah, one of whom had written this book about, you know, how to actually improve the world through student government.
I take it you never ran yourself.
Well, my high school career, I had a certain kind of career. I was a homeroom representative for 4 years, and I remember that every year we debated whether or not we were going to get a smoking lounge.
My guest is Tom Perata. His novel, Election, is the basis of the current film of the same name. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Tom Perata. His novel, Election, has been republished to coincide with the release of its film adaptation. There's also a new edition of his novel, The Wishbones, about a rock band that plays weddings. He's currently writing a movie adaptation of it. In the acknowledgments for your novel, The Wishbones, the novel about a band that plays weddings. You thank Mike Parada and all the members of RSVP, one of New Jersey's finest wedding bands, for letting you watch them in action. Is Mike your brother?
Mike is my cousin, but he's been a very influential figure for me. And he's also a high school teacher, by the way.
Oh.
So obviously, I'm like following the world that he's in very closely.
So he plays in a wedding band?
Yeah, he plays in the wedding band RSVP. There are a lot of guys who I grew up with and who I think are wonderful musicians. And, you know, there was a point when I'd heard that they were in a wedding band where I thought that, you know, oh, that I don't know how much they would like that because they wanted to be rock stars. And it seemed like a come down. But when I would go back to town and talk to them about it, I got the sense that, you know, they were really happy just to be making music and to be making money at it. And it led me to a kind of rethinking of what it might mean and how hard it is for people who want to do an art or have a passion in their life to keep doing it and how that's kind of a triumph in itself.
One of the bands that you describe in The Wishbones is a band of older musicians who are veterans of the big band era, and they always open their set with Kool and the Gang's Celebrate, because there's a celebration that they're playing for.
Yes.
I thought that was very funny that they'd open that way. I'm sure I've seen this band. Was there a real band you based it on?
Yeah, I went to a friend's wedding in New Haven, and there's these old guys in powder blue uniforms. And, you know, I think I grew up with rock and roll. I grew up in a youth culture. And, you know, we now see all these you know, I saw Bob Dylan last year. You know, he's getting up there. You know, at one point, rock and roll was a young person's game. And now, in some funny way, it's becoming an older person's game. And I was so thrilled by these guys to see how much energy they had and how much fun they were having. And they were working, you know, they were probably in their 60s and 70s, and they were working hard. And it did give me a glimpse of, you know, a nice life. I mean, how many people who pursue an art get to pursue it all the way through to the end of their lives? And how many people get to do it in this particular culture where, you know, youth is so highly valued and people in lots of fields find that their careers are over when they're, you know, in their 30s and 40s.
Have you ever had a Cater to Fear yourself in which you had a band like that playing?
You know what? I had to go the DJ route, which is a, you know, for a cousin of a guy in a wedding band, is sort of a letdown. You know, one of the things I have fun with in the Wishbones is the clash between wedding musicians and DJs. You know, the musicians really look down on DJs, and there's a kind of a deep-seated grudge. You know, it's expensive to hire a band, but they're actually making the music, whereas the DJ's just, you know, taking CDs out of the cases.
Actually, let me quote what one of the band members thinks. He hates the DJs because, quote, they were a revolting breed, scam artists who'd somehow managed to convince the world that it took talent to remove CDs from a plastic case while simultaneously jabbering into a microphone.
And the funny thing in The Wishbones, I think, is that the DJ who plays the wedding turns out to be a kind of psychic brother to the main character, Dave, who's a guitar player. It turns out that this guy, Rockin' Randy, is not so different from a Wishbone. He's a guy who just has this deep passion for music and is trying to find a way to fit it into his life. You know, and he has a day job at an insurance company, but he stays up late to do this, you know, 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. jazz radio show at a public station in Bridgeport, Connecticut. So that, you know, I was really interested in these characters who, as they get older, will do what they have to do to keep their passion for whatever it is, whether it's making music or playing music or writing poetry. Or there's even a nut who has a right-wing talk show on cable access.
What's been the equivalent for you until now as a writer? I mean, what has your ambition been to keep on writing, whether you're published or not, you know, whether you're acclaimed or not, whether you make any money at it or not?
Yeah, well, it was actually at the time I was writing The Wishbones was a real issue in my life. I was unable to find a teaching job for a year and, you know, had gotten married and was thinking of starting a family and was really worried that the kind of life I'd led through my 20s where I was able to get by on, you know, very small amount of money was about to come to an end. I mean, and for all that time, I had some sense that my salvation would be a teaching job, as it is for lots of writers in America. But I was also trying to figure out ways to make money as a writer, and I was ghostwriting, at that point, teen horror novels.
No kidding.
But also, yeah, yeah. I swore a pledge of secrecy, so I can't tell you whose novels I was ghostwriting, but they're very popular teen horror novels.
No, why would you have to take a pledge of secrecy? Because you were protecting the identity of the... You were protecting the fact that you were writing it from... Right.
Under somebody else's name, because this other person makes a big deal about, you know, being prolific and writing them all himself. And in the course of that, I was reading a lot of teen series novels like Sweet Valley High and 18 Pine Street, some of which, you know, lurk in the back of Election. I was really writing Election in some ways to, you know, fill in the blanks in these young adult books.
So was writing teenage horror stories under the name of this other author, was that the equivalent for you of playing in a wedding band?
In a way it was, because even though I could barely read these books that I was ghostwriting, I did have this odd sense of pride that, well, at the very least, you know, I've spent my life learning how to write and now I can make a living at it. And it was better to sit home and work for 3 hours on my computer than to go and, you know, be a temp proofreader for $10 or $12 an hour. So there was some way in which I began to understand just that sort of small pleasure of being a professional, of having some skill that I could use to make a living. I'd also done some advertising copywriting and had a similar feeling. And I also think you learn a kind of writerly discipline that some people learn through journalism. But yeah, I think to practice your art in such a way that you can make a living off of it gives you a certain kind of pride and teaches you some lessons about not treating it as a sacred task, but as work. You know, and there may be something sacred about work, but it's a little different from, you know, I can't work today because the muses aren't here.
Well, Tom Perotta, it's really been a pleasure to talk with you. I want to wish you good luck with the adaptation that you're writing of your novel, The Wishbones. And congratulations on Election being made into a movie. And thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
Tom Perotta's books, Bad Haircut, The Wishbones, and Election, have been republished to coincide with the film adaptation of Election.